Most of you, I think, have just come in the last day or so. This is the third in a series of three presentations entitled Christian Growing Pains. And if those of you that, there are four or five of you that have been here, if you will bear with us, I'll just do a fast review of the underlying format of these three presentations. My thesis is that God has created us for lifelong growth, and that the transitions of life are occasions for that growth. And sometimes those transitions are precipitated by outside events, sometimes by inner stirrings that seem to be built into us. That's the way God has made us. Now, no one fits any kind of scheme of the adult life journey exactly. But this is one scheme in which the adult life is divided into three eras, beginning with the early adult transition, which begins somewhere around age 21. And this is the time when the young person makes first job decisions, decides to marry or not marry. And starting that at around age 30, may ask some questions, have some second thoughts, and then settles down for a period of high productivity, whether it is the man who may be working, or the wife who is concentrating on child raising, whatever. And then comes this famous, infamous midlife transition. And we talked a bit about that this morning in Bible study, using Jacob as a case study. And that's when we begin to raise some very basic questions about our values, about the meaning of our lives, the meaning of our work, the meaning of our marriage, meaning of family life, whatever. And very often we go through a relatively traumatic and sometimes very painful change. And if we get through that reasonably well, we move on into the middle adult era, around age 50, do some rethinking, reinforcing, and then moving on into the latter part of the middle adult era. This evening we want to talk about the late adult transition and the late adult era. But that's a sort of linear kind of construct. If you'd like to go upstairs, you can find some cushions and or lean your back against the wall or stick your head through the railing, whatever. This is a rather linear kind of diagram, and life isn't linear. Life is not lived in a straight line. And so, as one possible image, one figure, I've used a three-wheeled vehicle that we use to go through life, and the vehicle we call is called vocation. And by vocation, I mean that term in the biblical sense. That's God's call to us to be a baptized Christian servant in the world. Vocation is a gift of God, comes by grace. And it is conveyed to us through the forgiveness of sin. And we implement vocation by showing Christ's love to the neighbor. That's our lifelong Christian vocation. But vocation has three elements. First of all, identity. We've said several times that our basic sense of who we are comes and is given in baptism. We are God's person. That's who we are. But how we experience that reality, how we live it out, should change during the course of our adult life. One understanding of who we are may be suitable at age 25, but that most likely is not suitable at 50 or at 70. Then there's the question of life work. By life work, we mean those activities which use our God-given talents in the world. It may or may not include our paid job. If we are really blessed, then part of our life work is in our job. That question of what is our life work also changes during the course of the adult life journey. The third part of vocation is relationships. And by that, I mean everything from marriage to friends, colleagues, acquaintances. For example, the way in which we live out our marriage. During our 20s, 30s, is most likely not suitable for our 40s. And the way we live out our marriage in our 40s is most likely not suitable for our 60s. We need to renegotiate. We need to rethink the matter of friends. Those three tasks need to be done in each of these life seasons. We need to pay attention to them, or else life gets out of kilter. Let me repeat that no scheme of the adult life journey fits everybody, because each of us is on a very special and unique life journey with a ticket marked good for this trip only, no transfers. One other basic understanding is that our Christian growth comes out of these day-to-day life experiences. Faith crises and spiritual growth does not come out of the blue sky. They come out of our daily life experiences. For the Christian, there is no such thing as a purely psychological issue, as a purely psychological crisis. For us as Christians, that's the stuff of which our faith is made. Now, in the earlier sessions, we dealt with the early adult era and the middle adult era, and the way we went about it was to talk about some of the issues that each of these eras raises. And that's usually how we come to these transitions. Toward the end of the middle years, things after the potential turmoil of the midlife transition, and then there's a settling down again. But then, as is always true, just when we think we have life under control, just when things seem to be going reasonably well, there's a whole bunch of new issues and a whole bunch of new questions that come up. And sure enough, they come up toward the end of the middle years. And that those questions are usually precipitated by the facing of retirement, that we've got to find a different word because the word has such negative connotations. But until we find a better one, that's what we have to use. It's the time when, if we are in a paid job, it's the point at which that particular paid job comes to an end. So, in that connection, the question comes, what do I do if I'm no longer employed? What do I do if I'm no longer employed? That's the question of life work. One of the common things that is said, particularly by men, as they get close to retirement, is, I've got so many things to do that I won't have time to do them. And what they have in mind are some fix-up tasks around the house they haven't had time to do because of the job. And of course, what the man usually says is that my wife has got this job list a mile long. I mean, that's the story. But then his own hidden agenda about all these things he wants to do includes such things as fishing, as playing golf. And, you know, the matter of the fix-up tasks around the house, the fishing trips, and the golf rounds, and maybe the travel, only seem interesting for a relatively short time. One of the reasons that men have enjoyed fishing so much is because it's time off. One of the reasons that men enjoy a round of golf so much is because it's time off. And somehow, you know, you can't go fishing every day. You can't play golf every day. For one thing, those things somehow don't seem quite as enjoyable when there's all kinds of time in which to do it. The other thing is that kind of activity is poor life stewardship, plain and simple, when it becomes more or less a full-time occupation. I mentioned in the first session that the parable of the talents has no age limit. At least I don't see any. And so this question of life work is very real when we reach that point that we call retirement. And men in particular are able to build this illusion that they're going to be so busy because they want to catch up on the fishing, they want to catch up on the golf, they want to catch up on the travel. And, you know, traveling, living out of a suitcase gets a little bit tiresome, too. We have a classic story from our time overseas. We were in Southeast Asia, the island of Borneo, which in the late 60s, the city in which we lived became one of those places that was in the travel ads, which you could go to places where nobody's been before. We were off the tourist route. And so we had a couple, three cruise ships come into port. And I recall that this one big cruise ship came into the port there in Borneo. And because I knew the local agent, why my family and I went out to that lovely cruise ship. And you know, we had these four small children with us, like four stepping stones. And as we walked up the ladder, we found that the ship's passenger list consisted of mostly older women, about 90% older women, and about 10% older men. First thing that happened was that the kids were latched onto, and the kids disappeared because they were taken to get some ice cream or whatever. Then as we got to talking with these people, and both the men and the women, what we found was that ship was full of bored people. And we heard a number of them say, we're on this cruise, which is a 47 or 58 day cruise around the world, and we're going to end up in New York. And 2 days after we get back, there's another cruise ship that's going to go around the world the other way on a different route, and we're going to get that one. Oh. First of all, these were people obviously in relatively good health. Secondly, they were obviously people that had some resources. And they were totally bored. What an incredible waste. Think of all of the things in the world. Think of the things in their own communities that were crying to be done by people with time and education and resources. But there they were. Now, maybe nobody here is in that wealth category, but I'm sure that you know have known people like that. And maybe they don't take cruises, but they're marking time and they're bored. What do I do if I'm no longer employed? What is my life work? How does God want me to use my God-given gifts now? And if I don't have the requirements of a paid job, think of the incredible satisfaction that I can gain by using my God-given gifts, because that is the greatest source of life satisfaction there is using our God-given talents, our God-given gifts. That's the strongest, biggest source of genuine life satisfaction. Okay. Allied to that is, who am I if I am retired? Once again, you see, just as here the question of identity is raised, because I have defined myself as a competent, driving, ambitious person. I've defined myself as a highly competent, loving, caring mother. And I'm going to be fired from my job as a mother pretty soon. Who am I then? So here, who am I if I am no longer at my paid job? Because our typical answer to the question, who are you? I'm a farmer. I'm a plumber. I'm an engineer. That's who I am. I'm a pastor. But if I'm no longer doing that particular task, who am I then? This question of identity. Our role as a worker in the typical sense is taken away. I spent quite a few years in the Naval Reserve as a chaplain. Years ago, I was on active duty in World War II. Then when I became a pastor, I went back in as a chaplain in the Naval Reserve. And so I had some contact with military people. This question of identity when military people retire. If any of you have retired military living in your neighborhoods and there are mailboxes, you probably see John Jones, USN, parentheses, RET, period, parentheses, USA, US Army, whatever. Their sense of who they are as a military person. And of course, they especially like to put their rank on there. If they retired as captains in the Navy, as four stripers in the Navy, or as a colonel in the Army, whatever, they like to put the rank on there. That's their identity. And a number of years ago, I did some work with senior Navy officers who were soon to retire. And we dealt with that issue. And I can tell you they resisted it. That's one of the more obvious examples of someone who hangs on to an identity which is no longer valid. And yet many of us do that. One of my pastor friends who has retired, left at noon today. Pastors who have retired, if they're asked, who are you, what do you do? The typical answer is, I'm a retired pastor. Or, I'm a retired engineer. I'm a retired plumber. I'm a retired whatever. We like to hang on to that question, identity. We need to go through that process, and perhaps it is not until this point in our lives when we have the opportunity to strip away all of the roles that we fill and to learn who we really are as God's persons. This is probably the best chance we've got to really get to the core of who we are, to get a new understanding of the meaning of our fundamental identity as God's person. This point, how do I relate to my spouse? I'm sure that all of you have heard the old cliche, the wife who said, I married my husband for better or for worse, for richer or poorer, but not for lunch. How do I relate to my spouse? Because we're going to be spending a lot more time together. I'm not going to be gone the bulk of the day. And we're going to be doing more things together at different times of the day and week than we have been used to. There needs to be some renegotiation. And it can be that our marriage has gone along very well simply because we've had that time apart 5 days a week. It can be a new ball game when we're together 7 days a week. And there's all kinds of stories about wives who wish their husbands would get out of the house. How do I relate to my children and grandchildren? Remember, we said that while most of us here, Holden these days, are up in this era, we need to understand that our adult children are going through some of this process. And, just at the point when our image was that our adult children should be a source of joy and comfort and support, maybe it doesn't turn out that way all the time. Because they're going through some crises of their own. And then here we are expecting that they're supposed to be, we're supposed to get some return now on the investment that we put into them. And maybe the percentage return on that investment isn't so good. At least it's not what we might have expected. So that can be a source of pain, disappointment, unless we have some understanding of what they may be going through, and unless we can come to terms with our own set of expectations. Yes?
In all regarding to that statement you just made there, somebody has said, I don't know where to pick it up, but anyway, when you bring kids in the world, it's forever.
That's right. That's right. Yep, parenting doesn't stop in one sense. The context changes, but parenting is from then on.
Forever.
Yep.
They always come home with their problems.
Yep.
Yeah. But you got to let them go.
At the same time, you have to let them go. That's right. This is the bind, isn't it? You have to let them go, and yet very often you have to be open. You have to be there when they need you. And how you can do that without reinvesting your whole self again as you did when they were young, that's one of the high wire tricks of this era. During this time, where and who are my friends? It's one of the other issues that comes up. You come to the point where you begin to lose friends that you have known for a long, long time. They pass on. And you're still around. And you've counted on them. We talked about this, about the need for having a support network of friends. One of the things that we need to be concerned about, as in fact you ought to start being concerned about it here, and certainly when we get up here, is that we widen our circle of friends. And for practical reasons, to cultivate friends who are younger than we. Now, we may think, well, why would someone 10, 15 years younger be interested in being friends with me? Let me tell you something. Any person in this era who is still growing is a very desirable friend. You are of value as a friend if you are still growing. If you put your life on hold, then you probably aren't much fun to be around. If you're talking the same way at 65 or 75 as you were at 60, if your world hasn't changed a bit, you probably are boring to be with, and you probably won't cultivate any new friends. But any older person who is still growing is fun to have as a friend. And you will find that if you're open to it, you can cultivate friends and have good friends who are younger than you. They say there's a very practical reason for that, because your peers have a way of dying. And pretty soon you're left alone. And you know, one of the morbid pastimes of older people, and maybe one of the cliche signs of older age, is when the first thing you look at in the daily newspaper is the obituary page. You're looking to see if your name is there. Well, that's one of the things of this era.
Don't you think that being a good listener, having the same interest, that type of thing will help you as a later adult?
Certainly. Learning how to listen to other people and being interested in other people at any age is one of the ways of being open to making friends. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Then we get to some of the other questions. The category of contingencies. What happens if I get sick? Or what happens if my spouse gets sick? Those are the kind of questions that we
instinctively don't want to deal with. And yet, those questions are there, aren't they? They're in our consciousness. But we try to push them down.
We have to deal with them regardless.
You bet we do. But many people don't want to, and they refuse to deal with that. I have some first-hand occasion to observe people in that situation as the director of a nursing home. I have very good friends who are members of the parish with which I'm involved who will not step foot in that nursing home. They say, I can't stand it. On the other hand, we have a large group of volunteers. We have about 75 volunteers that are on a regular schedule. I would say about 80% of those volunteers are over 65. They have faced that question. What happens if I get sick? What happens if my spouse gets sick? That question not only needs to be dealt with within ourselves, that issue also needs to be dealt with our children or our friends, with the person who would take up some responsibility should we become sick. How many times do we in our nursing home have to deal with adult children who are going through hell, literally, because they don't know what mother or dad would have wanted? And mother or dad at that point isn't able to articulate what's going on or what they want. They haven't talked about it. And of course, as an adult child, you don't go to your 75-year-old mother or dad and say, Mother, what should we do if you get sick? Now, if mother has been pushing that question down, you know, that really isn't the way to... Mother has to bring it up. Dad has to bring it up. When we are the ones that should be raising that issue so that our children can feel comfortable dealing with it, and we will save our children an awful lot of pain and guilt. And if we've dealt with it, we can put the question to rest because it's been taken care of. We don't have to fear it anymore because it has been taken care of. It's been dealt with. Back again to another question of identity. Who am I when my spouse dies? Who am I when my spouse dies? If we have been married for 40, 50 years, that's a long time to be in that relationship. And regardless of what else we have done in order to shape our own identities as individual persons, of God. It's an awful wrench when a spouse dies. Who am I when my spouse dies? I'm no longer a wife. I'm no longer a husband. I'm a single person. That's a whole new ballgame. Tomorrow morning, the Bible study will talk about that kind of thing in a little bit more detail and how sometimes we have to really struggle with that. Then there is a rather large issue, a big question that comes during this time, because instinctively, as we get older, we begin to review our life. And the question comes, has my life been worthwhile? And of course, the way most of us are. As we look back, what sticks up? All kinds of red flags about the mistakes we made. The goose. That's what we especially remember. And oh my, we can really make ourselves miserable because we think of all of the things we did wrong, all of the wrong choices. And, you know, son or daughter is having some problems. What did I do wrong as a parent? And so that question was, has my life been worthwhile? Is a biggie. Once again, you see, that's not a purely psychological question. As Christians, of course we recognize that we goofed, maybe more than once. Maybe we made more than one mistake. But as Christians, we know and we believe that we are God's persons not by virtue of a life free of mistakes, but by virtue of the grace of God and the forgiveness of God. And forgiveness takes on brand new depths of meaning as we get older. And one of the things that becomes much richer, much more meaningful to us is Eucharist, Holy Communion. And we begin to understand in a new, far more profound way some of the meanings of the Eucharist. And we discover that we get long past the question of should we have communion more than once a month. In fact, as we get older, I would guess if we'd be open, we would like to have Eucharist offered as often as possible, because it provides so much meaning. It conveys to us the continued promise of the grace and love of God in Jesus Christ. Well, not only do we have these issues, I've been talking to a number of people these last days, and while there probably is a point at which there's a distinct lifestyle change, that is, there's the shift to the so-called retirement living income from the pay job income, but life is not lived in a straight line from then on. A number of years ago, there was a book written. It is now out of print, but if by any chance you can get it, especially if you're in your 70s or 80s, this is a book I highly recommend. The title of it is The Measure of My Days. The Measure of My Days by a woman named Florida Scott Maxwell. She wrote the book when she was 92. She was then in her third career. And she writes about how she changed from her 60s to her 70s and from her 70s to her 80s. Now you see, none of the adult development people have done any research on the lifestyle changes that continue as we age past 65 or 70. And the reason they haven't is because the adult development researchers haven't reached that age. Remember, those of you that were here, I told you about all these neat books that have come out in the last few years about adult development. If you look at the books, it's as if life stops at 50. That's because the authors haven't reached 50 yet. But here's a book that, if you can find it, and it may be in your library, in your public library, I hope it is. I say it is out of print, but it is a gem. It's a little book, but it's a gem. Florida Scott Maxwell writes about how she was, as she looked back on it, she was really surprised at what happened to her in her 80s. She said, "I became passionately involved and passionately concerned in political causes." Yeah. That may not be your thing in your 70s. But I would be willing to bet, if I were a gambling man, that any growing person will have transitions, will continue to have transitions, will continue to experience changes as long as God gives health and strength. One of you here in this group talked to me the other day about having been feeling as though he'd really been giving out, really been concerned about other people, but at this point he's not quite sure whether he feels that isn't what he should do right now. And of course, if you start feeling that way as good Christians, you're going to start feeling guilty. I mean, because you're always supposed to help other people. But just as at any of these transitions, there is a time when you need to withdraw, when you need to take care of yourself, that there can also be those times in your older years. And that's valid. That's how our strength and power gets renewed, when we pay attention to what's going on inside. There's a favorite phrase that is being used these days called burnout. It's almost become a cliche. It is a reality. Burnout is a signal, a red flag, that we ought to pause, take some time to take care of ourselves. And sometimes people who have been really giving of themselves do experience some kind of burnout. And I propose that can happen here too, as well as in the high-powered people in their middle years. And so if that happens, it's not because you don't love God anymore. It's not because you don't love people anymore. It's simply God telling you it's time to take care of yourself for a little while, to find some new strength, some new direction, perhaps. Well, by way of summary, I'm also leading Vespers tonight, so I have to get over there. By way of summary, once again, there are no life issues on the adult life journey that are not faith issues. It's the stuff of our daily life that is our Christian faith. That's where it's lived. It is what is going on in our sense of who we are, our life work, and relationships that comprise our vocation. Those are the things that bring us to these transitions. These are the occasions of our continuing growth, which almost always involves some pain. But growing pains are always a sign of health. So take heart. Questions? Comments? The Bible is a marvelous resource for us as we get older. And as this gentleman was talking to me by the dining hall a few hours ago, and we were talking about how the longer we live, the more we see in Scripture. And that what we see in Scripture when we're in our 30s and 40s is what is appropriate for that time of life. We get as much out of Scripture at any given point in our lives as we can use, as we can absorb. And one of the great things about getting older is the opportunity to find new riches and new depths in Scripture. Because the Scripture is absolutely inexhaustible.
It seems that too many men make no constructive plans for what they're going to do after they retire. And with my pension check, it came this little bulletin said 13 an hour. What were they talking about? It says, well, they received 13 Social Security checks in their debt. Now, I have no way of verifying that, but that's what they said. That's what happens when people make no constructive plans for their retirement as men. I think women, if they kept house, et cetera, all their life, they go right on keeping house. There's no big change, except to have a man cluttering up the place.
Right.
Right.
When people are down there in that about 60, when I was 55, I began getting bulletins about what thinking about retirement. But not all people get that because they're in different kinds of work.
You see, if we have had some understanding of life transitions as opportunities for Christian growth, here, when we hit this, it's really not that big a deal because we've been through the exercise a number of times before. And then retirement isn't that big shock because we've learned how to get through transitions. We've learned something. As long as we are continue open. Well, thank you, people. It's fun to be with you because, as I said in the first session, you people that come up here are part of that growing segment of our population that is eager for lifelong growth. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here at Holden. It's fun to be with you. Thank you.